So today, it's a very special occasion, of course. Of course it is. And so I have a very special message for us. The reason that Die Hard is considered to be a Christmas movie is because Christmas just won't go away. In fact, Christmas dies hard. So it was the Puritans in both the USA and the UK back in the day who banned Christmas. It was Christian Puritans who banned Christmas for quite a long time, but it came back. The Soviets tried to ban it, but they failed. The Nazis in Germany tried to ban it, but they failed. The People's Republic of China and countries like Saudi Arabia even have bans on it to this day, but people still celebrate it nonetheless, so we could say, yippee-ki-yay, John McClane. So, Christmas has a lot of amazing history surrounding and traditions surrounding, and also some quite surprising history and some quite surprising traditions surrounding it. Did you know that it was the Vikings who invented the Christmas wreath? I like that response. Ooh, the Vikings. Did you know that Jingle Bells was originally written as a Thanksgiving holiday song and not a Christmas song? Some of you, yes, we did. We did know that one. Who didn't know that one? A few people didn't know that one, didn't know. Noah didn't know it. The young child didn't know it. Did you know that Christmas trees were originally hung upside down? You knew that. No, that's true. That is true. Do your own research. At Christmas time, we have these customs and these traditions and these rituals, and they're so important to look back because looking back at these things teaches us and reminds us how to live now and how to strive forward into the future. All the things, all the stories, and all of the customs surrounding Christmas build up for us this powerful image of why the eternal Son of God was born in human flesh and became a mere man. We cannot forget how God has been communicating the impact of his Son on earth throughout the generations, throughout all of our customs, on all of our history. In fact, one enchanting and quite charming aspect, something I've come across, is the carol, maybe you've heard of it, the carol of Good King Wenceslas. You heard of the carol of Good King Wenceslas? Now, maybe I can hum it a little bit in my head. Maybe I can hum that carol a little bit. Maybe you say, Matt, this is ridiculous. I've never heard of this before in my life. Maybe you're just nervous because, like, I don't know how to say it. It's like Worcestershire sauce. I never know how to say that properly. It's three sounds. Let's do it together. When. Sa. Sloss. Put it together. When sa sloss. You got it. You guys are nailing it. This is awesome. Some of the greats have performed Good King Wenceslas, and let's see, Bing Crosby did a version of it. What did I say? Oh, I said, that's not good. You shouldn't say that. That's, you can get in trouble. I get canceled for saying that. Bing, well, how do you say his last name? Crosby. Practice with me. Help me practice this today. Okay. I'm just going to move on. Frank Sinatra sang Good King Wenceslas. Took me a long time how to say Wenceslas, I got to tell you. Julie Andrews did a version of it. Who else did a version of it? Elvis Presley, Nat King Cole, even the Beatles did some of these verses of this Christmas carol. And in the Christmas movie Love Actually, any fans of Love Actually, Hugh Grant's character, who he's playing the Prime Minister of England in that movie, and he's knocking on doors trying to find his love interest, and he comes across a couple of kids who think he's a caroler. And so him and his security detail start singing Good King Wenceslas. That's the cultural reference to it there. C.S. Lewis and G.K. Chesterton both wrote about this Christmas carol that they had fond feelings for it. This carol has both history and legend baked into it, but it has a profound morality at its core, and it's got the kind of message that we can only get from the birth of Jesus. So we're going to dig deep into the meaning of it today, and then we're going to enjoy a performance of Good King Wenceslas. But I'm not going to make you sing it. You're welcome. God gives us poetic expressions, especially through song, to get these truths, these historical truths, these scriptural truths, and we're going to be getting into more scripture at the end of this, get these things deeper into our hearts, not just to create nostalgia, although that is part of it. Some of these ancient things have a real charm and magic to them that bring the Christmas season alive to us. They increase our appreciation. They align our hearts together so that we can all align around what is true and what is good, so that we can have our hearts filled with the miraculous power that caused Jesus to be born of a virgin. But to tell this story, to tell you the history of this, I got to get into character. Last year, I told the story of Charles Dickens. You guys remember that? And I wore a top hat for it to get into character. So today, my firstborn, the heir of my estate, my legacy, Prince Jones, is going to crown me. Let's cue the music. Wait, we got... Okay, they ended the music. Okay. Now, the only problem with doing this is that you might miss the points I'm going to make because all you can think about is how I look quite a bit like the Burger King guy. Do you see it? You see the Burger King guy? So look, I think for the sake of, I want to get the points across. I think I've made my point. Would you guys want me to keep it on or take it off? What do you want? He's behind you. No, he's not. Pantomime. British joke, sorry. What do I do, guys? Keep it on, take it off? Keep it on. Cassia says keep it on. I'm going to go with her. All right, I was going to take it off, but I'll keep going back and forth on this. So just don't think of Burger King as I'm continuing here. The words to Good King Wenceslas were written in 1853 by a guy called John Mason Neal. And John Mason, he became enamored with the story of this particular king. And he found this springtime melody from the 13th century, and he married together the story, the history of this king with this springtime melody, and he has forever immortalized the person of Wenceslas. I said that a little weird, Wenceslas. Still sounds wrong in my head every time I say it. Even though this carol is an artistic fable, it is based on real history. The original character was the Duke of Bohemia. And what's interesting about this Duke, well, Bohemia is now modern-day Czech Republic. And so back in the day when they were still a kingdom, the king, the Duke, he was only considered a king after his death, when the people actually crowned him or anointed him historically and recognized him as a king, even though in his life he was only technically a duke. In this, we immediately see a parallel with Jesus. We consider Jesus to be King of Kings and Lord of Lords, and after his resurrection, after his ascension, we understand he is sitting at the right hand of God in the place of absolute authority, crowned as king. But in his life, he was rejected, he was treated as a criminal, crucified for us. And so in this, we see this parallel with Wenceslas, that he was not a king, considered a king in his life, but crowned a king in his death. The carol, the Christmas carol, Good King Wenceslas, was originally written for the feast of St. Stephen, otherwise known as Boxing Day, the day after Christmas. Verse 1 of this carol, Good King Wenceslas, says this: Good King Wenceslas looked out on the feast of Stephen. Now, Stephen is from the Bible, from Acts chapter 7. He is the first Christian martyr. He was killed for preaching the gospel. And every time we read of a martyrdom, whether it's in the Bible or in Christian and church history, it points to the greatest martyrdom, the greatest sacrifice that was made, Jesus dying on the cross in our place for our sin. What's powerful about Stephen is Stephen was appointed by the apostles to care for the poor and needy. And in this work, we see that he's not just somebody who is a preacher of good words, but he's a doer of gospel deeds. The last part of verse 1 says this, this next slide. It says, "Brightly shone the moon that night, though the frost was cruel, when a poor man came in sight, gathering winter fuel." So what's happening here is this good king, he's in his royal house on the day, on Boxing Day, the day after Christmas, on the day of the feast of Saint Stephen. And they're enjoying a feast. He's living in luxury. He's royalty. But he looks out in this dark night, this wintry night, and he sees a poor man. He's looking down and he sees the kind of person that this feast day is supposed to be remembering. And he sees this man struggling. This man is without fuel to keep his home warm. And he has a heart of compassion for him. Now, what's powerful about this is at this time in history, royalty had started this horrible tradition where they expected the people to give them Christmas presents. And so the common person began to despise Christmas because not only throughout the whole year, you know, royalty overtaxing us, living in luxury, above us, kind of putting their heel on us, as it were. And now, at Christmas time, they expect even more from us. And the people resented Christmas time, resented monarchs because of this, understandably so. And the good king, the Duke of Bohemia, he reversed this tradition. And so this carol, Good King Wenceslas, is a reminder to us of what Christmas is about. The implications of what Christmas is about. Of course, we know Christmas is about the birth of Jesus, but the implications, the ramifications of why Jesus came, and this is to remember, to give, to remember to be charitable to those, especially throughout all the year, but especially at Christmas time, to be acutely aware of those in great need. And traditionally, historically, that was the day after Christmas, this Boxing Day. And it's called Boxing Day because it said that the rich and the wealthy would put together boxes of food or boxes of fuel or boxes of gifts and leave them out for those who were suffering, those who were struggling. And it was, that's why it's called Boxing Day. In fact, America, I believe this is true, America, I think, is the only English-speaking country that doesn't celebrate Boxing Day. Now, I love that reaction down there. Now, we are still extremely generous as a culture. We are very generous at the time of Christmas. So we've kept the tradition of generosity at the time of Christmas, but we've lost the remembrance of Boxing Day. Although I will say in a lot of countries that still have Boxing Day, I don't know that they're actually being charitable to the poor on that day. Just to add that to it. Now, this carol continues on in a conversational manner. So there's a conversation between the king and between his assistant here. So we'll read on here in verse 2. The king says this. He says, "Hither, page, and stand by me." So he's calling his assistant. "If thou knowest it, telling. Yonder peasant, who is he? Where and what his dwelling?" So the king is talking to his assistant, his page, and he's basically saying, where does this man live? Where's his dwelling? We need to find this person because essentially we want to help him. And then it goes on. The king, or the page responds. He says, "Sire, he lives a good league hence, underneath the mountain, right against the forest fence by St. Agnes Fountain." So we learn, so it's great. The page knows who this poor person is. The king is interested. He doesn't know. The page knows. And the page is saying he lives a really far way away. He's through the forest. This is dangerous. He is at the nighttime, you know, to travel through the forest in the dark of night. This is, there are dangerous things that can happen in the forest, and it's wintertime as well, and he lives a far way away at the base of the mountain by this special fountain. Agnes, who is Agnes? Agnes was a 13-year-old girl who was martyred for her faith, killed because she was a Christian. And so in this carol, we're getting this theme coming through. We've got the first Christian martyr mentioned on the Feast of Stephen. Saint Stephen's Day. And now we're learning about Agnes, this 13-year-old girl who was also killed for her faith. Then it continues. The king responds. He says, "Bring me flesh and bring me wine. Bring me pine logs hither. Thou and I will see him dine when we bear them thither." Now he's saying, bring me flesh, bring me, let's get meat, let's get the best meat we can. We want this poor man, we want him to feast at Christmas time. We want him to have some meat. We want him to have some alcohol. We want him to have some pine logs, some of the best fuel that we can get, some wood, so that he can be warm during this winter blizzard that we're facing, essentially. This is what's he's communicating, that last line there, when he says, when we bear them thither, that just means essentially when we arrive at his place with all of these things we're bearing, all these things we're bringing to him. And then it continues on in the next verse. The page responds, "Sire, the night is darker now and the wind blows stronger. Fails my heart, I know not how, I can go no longer." So what we see happening here is we see the page describing how brutal this winter scene is, that it is frigid cold, it is windy, it's snowy, it's dark, it's a winter wonderland for sure, but a dangerous one through the forest. And the page is saying, I can't go on, I'm failing, how can I continue on? And what a powerful lesson for us, a message for us in this ancient Christmas carol, telling us of the barriers that we face when we either think or we try and act to those who are less fortunate than us, how hard it can be for us to meet their need when we feel like we ourselves can barely carry on. Giving is not supposed to be easy. The king and his assistant, they had to enter the storm. They had to experience the poor man's storm in order to relieve him of the storm. They had to enter into his pain in order to relieve his pain from him. And this is how the king responds. He says to his page, he says, "Mark my footsteps, good my page. Tread thou in them boldly. Thou shalt find the winter's rage. Freeze thy blood less coldly." As a good king, he's saying, follow me. I am making a pathway for you. I'm going before you. I'm going ahead of you. I'm making a way where there's not a way. And I want you to follow in my footsteps. I want you to lean into my strength. Find courage from my courage and my strength. I'm lightening your burden. Yes, it's hard. Yes, you're still going to be a little cold, but you're going to have enough strength to get through it. King Wenceslas is a servant king, a king who is serving his servant. And in that way, he is an amazing image of Christ to us. Christ the king, the newborn king who came humbly as a servant, who doesn't lord his power over people, but invites people in to a relationship with him, to know the one true God, the God of heaven. And then the final verse of this carol says this. The first part of it says, "In the master's steps he trod, where the snow lay dinted. Heat was in the very sod which the saint had printed." What's happening here is he's describing something miraculous. He's saying that not just humanly speaking, where someone would step into the snow and just make a footprint, he's saying that the snow melted and the ground was heated. Now, this is the legendary part of the carol. This is an artistic way to communicate to us something powerful in how Jesus operated, but also how we operate in the world, that as we give of ourselves, as we make sacrifices, as we think of those who are the least, who are more vulnerable than we are, who are less fortunate than we are, that we, our courage, our steps brings a warmth, brings a miraculous healing in the world, which empowers others. This is the point. This is the big message coming through this carol of Good King Wenceslaus, but it ultimately points us to the divine love of Christ, that we know we can face any storm. We can give of ourselves to others because we know we're following in the footsteps of Jesus, and we know that what might freeze us to death, well, he's overpowered it so that we can follow in his footsteps. And the very last part of the carol says this. It says, therefore, Christian men, be sure, wealth or rank possessing, ye who now will bless the poor shall yourselves find blessing. There's profound truth coming through this carol. No matter your rank, your position in life, you're somebody of great influence, somebody known, or you've got some kind of leverage in life, or you're somebody who you have no rank in life. Doesn't matter. Doesn't matter your wealth, your status, whatever you have. If you have advantages, you have something that somebody else doesn't have. The point of this is that we can never find the happiness of God unless we're willing to pour out, like Jesus did for us, pour out for those in need. Now, as we push through the legendary part of this carol, and we actually push deeper into the historical power of this song, and we look at the true Duke of Bohemia, we learn some gruesome and bizarre things. The Duke of Bohemia lived, it was 907 AD when he was born, back in the days, a long time ago. In fact, actually, interestingly, another good, not a good king, but a King Wenceslaus of the same name, I don't know if he was actually, probably was, a descendant, several centuries later, commissioned the first German translation of the Bible before Luther translated the Bible. And it's called the Wenceslas Bible. It's in a cathedral, I think, in Prague. You can go and see it. And there's some interesting history around that. But our King Wenceslas, born in 907 AD, when his father was killed, it destabilized the kingdom. When the Duke of Bohemia his father was killed, the kingdom destabilized. His mother was banished. His grandmother was taken out by assassins. They killed an old granny. How can you do that? That's the way monarchs, some of these things seem to go. And the kingdom was divided in two. So Wenceslaus received half the kingdom, and then his younger brother received the other half. His younger brother was called Boleslaus. And I kid you not, his nickname, this is true history, what I'm telling you right now, his nickname was Boleslav the Cruel. Sounds made up, but it's true. Boleslav the Cruel. At this time, there was enormous tension in the kingdom, because Wenceslaus wanted to continue on with his Christian tradition. He wanted to continue on for the kingdom to be a Christian kingdom, for them to be Christian, for them to uphold Christian morals and uphold biblical truths. He wanted to lean into that. That was what he wanted. But his evil younger brother, Boleslaw, didn't want that, and there was a plot against Wenceslaus. So his evil younger brother, Boleslav the Cruel, got together some noblemen. They planned an assassination, and they were successful. They killed him on the steps of the church. And I think it's September 28th every year in the Czech Republic, they still remember the feast day of Saint Wenceslaus. His remains were moved to a cathedral in Prague, where his body is to this day. And he followed in the footsteps of Stephen, the first Christian martyr from Acts chapter 9. He followed in the footsteps of Agnes, the 13-year-old martyr as well. And he followed, of course, in the footsteps of Jesus. Wenceslaus was willing to make the ultimate sacrifice, to lay down his life, to hold on to what he believed to be true and good, to build a better kingdom, God's kingdom, to bring God's kingdom in the here and now. In the carol, the legendary aspect of this, we're told that the good king, that he cared about the poor man that he saw from his palace, as it were, from his castle, from his kingly estate. As he's looking down, he had not just concerned for him, but he had the willingness to go and help him. That his page, as his page is struggling through the winter storm, that he had a heart and he had the ability and the power to bring him along with him. But in real life, we see that the Duke of Bohemia was willing to push through Christian charity, to fight for Christian compassion and the Christian message and Christian hope. Because in the Christian faith, we have the greatest truth. The greatest truth that blessing is found in sacrifice. Blessing is found in sacrifice. What is blessing? Blessing is to experience the happiness of God. And the only way you get the happiness of God is to experience greater sacrifice. And the greatest sacrifice is Christ. This is how we get the blessing and the happiness of God into our hearts, into our lives, is to receive Christ, is to receive the greatest gift given to us. And as we receive that gift, the divine gift given to us, that's what empowers us to give the most extravagant, the most wonderful gifts towards others, to bless others who are less fortunate than us. And that doesn't always mean materialistically. It can be those who are spiritually poor and spiritual poverty as well. Joy is found in giving. Love is found in sharing. When we hold tightly to our lives and to the things we have, we're more and more miserable. In fact, you could even say that the carol Good King Wenceslas is kind of a reverse version of A Christmas Carol, Charles Dickens' Scrooge character, right? Who is a wealthy individual who looks down upon the poor, who despises the poor. His heart is hard towards the poor. And he has to have this dramatic experience, this dramatic spiritual experience, to have his eyes opened up, that people are not just lumps of flesh walking around, but people have spirits within them, divinely made by God, made in God's image, and he has to have this near-death type experience of these ghosts to wake him up. The difference is, between that story and our carol today, is that Good King Wenceslas, he already understands. He's somebody of means, somebody of wealth, somebody of knowledge, somebody of understanding, somebody of influence, somebody of power and stature, but he already understands the plight of the poor, and he's willing to personally experience the difficulties that others experience, even to the point where he's willing to die rather than give in. He's willing to lay it all on the line and say, I believe in the one true God, the one true King. And what he said goes, even if it means my life is taken away. And that, isn't that the person we're all supposed to be growing into? The person, the image of Christ, we're supposed to be growing into that image. In fact, Jesus said this in Matthew chapter 25. Jesus says, then the King will say to those on his right, come, you who are blessed by my Father, inherit the kingdom prepared for you from the foundation of the world. For I was hungry and you gave me food. I was thirsty and you gave me drink. I was a stranger and you welcomed me. I was naked and you clothed me. I was sick and you visited me. I was in prison and you came to me. Then the righteous will answer him saying, Lord, when did we see you hungry and feed you, or thirsty and give you drink? And when did we see you a stranger and welcome you, or naked and clothe you? And when did we see you sick or in prison and visit you? Next slide. And the King will answer them, truly, I say to you, as you did to one of the least of these, my brothers, you did it to me. We have a powerful application today. We already talked about two ways as a church that we can be Christ-like in this season of Christmas time, that we can give to our Christmas offering, our sacrificial offering. We have our slide for that. I want to ask you to, we mentioned it earlier on, but I really want to ask you, in the spirit of Christmas, let's give to those who really need it. Let's make a sacrifice. Let's enter into the pain. Let's understand that we have to enter the forest, go through the wintry storm, that it's not easy, that it is painful, and there's lots of barriers for us, but there's blessing. There's so much blessing in this. But it's also, we have another opportunity as well. We're doing this community food drive. We're asking people to donate things on January 5th. So we want to come back January 5th for our 10 a.m. service. And as we come, we'll be collecting canned foods and other foods in the lobby. And I want to ask you to make a commitment now to do that. So we have this next slide here. On the back of that Connect card, everyone go ahead and grab out your Connect card real quick. Go ahead and grab this out of your packet real quick. I want to see this. You got your packets? On that other step there, write in Food Drive January 5th. I want you to ask you to make that pledge today, that commitment. Hey, I want to participate in this opportunity to really bless those who are struggling. I want to go ahead and invite Merrick up. We're going to, in just one second here, be hearing a performance of Good King Wenceslas. And that Connect card you have and the offering envelope, you can, the baskets may not come around, so you can put them in at the back there. Let me end on this, that true sacrifice, when we make a true sacrifice, there is joy and love in it. And the sacrifice, the greatest sacrifices we make are actually beyond the material things we give. Those are important and those are very profound, but the truest sacrifices we make are actually internal sacrifices, where we surrender, where we sacrifice our pride in ourselves. We sacrifice our materialistic worldview that denies God and denies the power of God, where we sacrifice our judgments against others, where we come down from our lofty positions, from the places that we occupy, where we look down on others. We come down and we say, I'm going to associate with the poor and with the lowly because that's who Christ associates with. I'm going to enter that storm. I'm going to give up my discomfort. I'm going to sacrifice my discomfort. I'm going to sacrifice the approval I need and the image that I feel like I need from other people. I'm going to sacrifice all of that because there's a greater work that Jesus has for me in the world. And we see it coming through this good King Wenceslas, who's the image of Christ to us, the birth of a king to us today. We have to stop following in the footprints of the world. It's so easy to walk the pathway of the world. Instead, we have to follow in the footprints of God. Because the footprints of Jesus give us warmth and give us courage. And as we hear this performance today, let us ask ourselves the question, how can I go deeper into my identity and into the image of Jesus? How can I find happiness in sacrifice, knowing that God rewards all sacrifice? And so I hope that every single one of you has a very Merry Christmas this year.